Take a unique look at the National Football League with Pro Football View from the East, a program dedicated to bringing listeners in-depth coverage on all 32 teams. Join host Joe Tufaro, a lifelong Giants fan, and Dennis Agapito, a die-hard Jets fan, as they offer up hard-hitting opinions and analysis on the NFL from a New York perspective. So, let's start the show. From the East, here's Joe and Dennis.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Pro Football View from the East. This is one of your hosts, Dennis Agapito, and we're going to be doing some wonderful analysis of Week 15 in the NFL coming up. Excitement, playoff, you know, spots coming down to the wire. And as always, I'm joined by my good friend, Mr. Joe Tufaro, who's a little happier today because he's sort of back in first place. His team is sort of back, you know, tied, but you know what, does the if the season ended today sort of scenario, it doesn't really play out when there's 3 weeks left. So Joe, how are you doing this fine day?
Good. And I am happier because, you know, all of a sudden Tom Coughlin's smart again because we won a football game. And so, you know, it's just how everything turns around from week to week in the NFL is funny. And just wanted to, you know, Dennis, if you'd give me a minute here, I made a comment about Jerry Reese last week, and you and I had a little discussion about, you know, whether he's been successful or not and where he should stand. So I went back and I said, you know, before we really have this conversation, maybe we should revisit what he's done. I think people look at the, you know, immediate past sometimes, and they're not really, you know, we make some kind of sweeping statements. And if you give me 2 seconds here, I just want to go over a couple of names here. You know, he's had 57 draft picks since he's been here, and I have 35 of them as being successful, being people who have contributed to the team, and about 20, 22 that, you know, you could look at and say, okay, Ramsey Barden never worked out. Travis Beckham never worked out, had one big catch. Clint Sintem, Jonathan Goff, Brian Keel, Matt Dodge, Philip Dillard, you know, and then there are the guys like Darrell Scott, Jaquan Williams, Tyler Sash, who all played on a Super Bowl champion team, but they only played for a couple of years. Greg Jones, linebacker out of Michigan State. Adrian Robinson, who he declared was the next JPP. Those are the names that people remember. But if you go through his list of draft choices, from Ahmad Bradshaw, Kevin Boss, Zach Diassi, Jay Alford, Steve Smith, Aaron Ross, Mario Manningham, Terrell Thomas, Andre Brown, Will Beatty, Hakeem Nicks, Linval Joseph, JPP. You know, Joseph's not playing for us anymore, but he's one of the better defensive tackles in the league, playing up in Minnesota. Reuben Randall, who's still on the team. David Wilson was a good pick. You know, Nassib's still with the team. Justin Pugh, Devin Kennard, Andre Williams, OBJ, obviously Odell Beckham and Flowers and Landon Collins. So, again, I think some of his draft picks have been really, really good. Obviously, we had to cut one of them this week in DeMontre Moore, which I give him credit for, and we can kind of look back at that situation. But then I had also made the point that maybe he hadn't signed very good free agents to add to his rosters. But when you go through his free agents, Madison Hedgecock, Lawrence Tynes, Kevin Booth, Kavika Mitchell, David Carr, who was here twice as a backup for Eli, Michael Boley, Chris Canty, Rocky Bernard, Antrell Roll, Deion Grant, Devin Thomas, David Boss, Steve Weatherford, Andre Brown, Stevie Brown, Martellus Bennett, Dominic Rogers Cromartie, and then his undrafted free agents and Victor Cruz and Will Tye this year and the kid out of Connecticut. So maybe I was a little unfair to him saying he hadn't done much. And I think if you look at that resume, like we talked about, Dennis, maybe he either stays or someone looks at that and says, he hasn't been done that bad. We're just looking for, you know, we're tying the team success to what happens. And again, I don't think you can blame a guy like that for injuries. So I just think he's actually done better than a lot of people give him credit for. And if you went back and looked over the list, you'd probably have that same feeling as you read the names and realized how they contributed. And again, NFL average life of an NFL player, Dennis, is what, 3.5 years, 4 years? which is a lot of those guys lasted. And again, you know, you can't worry about, you can't count on injuries. You can't count a guy as being unsuccessful because 4 years or 5 years into his career, like an Aaron Ross, pulls his hamstring and is never going to be as fast as he was and never been able to be the player that he was. So I don't know. I just wanted to throw that out there and see what let people talk about that and realize some of the things he's done here.
Well, you know what? I mean, obviously you're looking at it from a Giants fan's perspective and you're trying to be fair. If a Jet fan, like for example, a guy like D. Milner, John Izik is still being killed that he drafted a guy who was injury prone and a guy got injured, you know? And I don't know of any really guy coming out of college who doesn't have a surgery or something. I mean, look, Todd Gurley. I mean, here's a guy coming off a pulled ACL. He wasn't ready to start the season, but he sure looks good now. I mean, if you don't draft guys that have had some injury in the past, well, you're not going to draft anybody.
Exactly. It's
so a lot of people
playing. Yeah.
Some people, well, D. Milner, actually, when he was on the field, is pretty darn good, but he hasn't been. And you know what is that? Like, for example, Mike Maccagnan drafted Devin Smith. Smith, who has not had a history of being injury prone. Well, he got injured in training camp, and now he just pulled his ACL, and God knows if he's going to be able to start. I don't think he's going to be able to start next year. So is that Mike Maccagnan's fault? Well, you know, it was John Idzik's fault back in the day when if injuries happened. Now, look, here's the thing with me that I look at it from both perspectives, for Jets and Giants, is this. Mm-hmm. Right now, they're both kind of middle-of-the-road teams. Even the Jets are a little bit further advanced. I'll give you a quick statistic. At 12 of the 13 games the Jets have played have been against teams with lower than a 500 record.
Right.
Okay? So it just goes to show you that take nothing away from a victory in this league. But the Jets have kind of been given a gift here in their scheduling. And, you know, take nothing away. They're 8-5. They have a chance to make the playoffs. We're going to go over the playoff picture in a minute. Okay? But, you know, if the Jets had lost that game to the Giants, which we discussed last week and very well could have, they'd be 7-6 and they'd really be irrelevant. I mean, they would not be in the playoff picture. But they are in the playoff picture, and good for them. You take advantage of your opportunities when they come because they don't always come. And when they do, you got to take advantage of them. Mm-hmm. You know, ask the 1999 Jet fan who watched the 1998 season and said, ooh, we're going to the playoffs, and one pulled Achilles tendon later if they were an 8-8 team. Anyway, my point is
I think you're right about that. And again, you don't apologize for who you play. You play who they give you to play. You know, you don't worry about if you get to play Dallas the week, you know, after Tony Romo gets hit or, you know, gets hurt or before. You, like you said, you take that opportunity because you look back, go back even further, Dennis, because I know you're old enough. You know, in 86 when the Giants won the Super Bowl, the Jets were fantastic that year and then lost their last five games. And, you know, again, you have to do something when you have the chance to do it because it doesn't come around that often.
Yeah, just like when they went to Denver or the Jets and they lost in the AFC Championship game and had six turnovers. I always say this. I say, you know, if they had gone to that Super Bowl, they would have won it. I mean, I don't care what you say. They would have. They'd already beaten Atlanta that year by 21 points. If
anybody
the Denver Broncos
Atlanta.
Had turned the ball over six times, if the Denver Broncos, the Jets would have won that game by 50. This kind of goes right into my point. That 1998 team for the Jets was a championship caliber team. That didn't win a championship. Just because you're a championship caliber team doesn't mean you're necessarily going to win a championship.
Right,
but
right.
I think you understand the difference between a championship. Like, as much as I hate to say it, the Patriots have been a championship caliber team for the most part. Even those Super Bowls they lost, they were a caliber team that you could say could have won. The Giants went in there two times. Last year, you could have said they're a championship caliber team. They could have lost. Anyway, my point is
that also goes to my point last week of I don't think anybody in the NFC East is a championship caliber team. And that's what we were talking about, saying, I know there's a chance. You know, if you get in the tournament, anything can happen. But I don't look at those teams right now saying, wow, if the Cowboys win three more games, how excited would you be to see them in the playoffs? I'm like, you know, I don't think they're – I look at the Packers, you know, you look at the Cardinals, you look at obviously the Seahawks as they've done it, you look at what the Panthers are doing, and again, you look at Patriots, you look at, you know, maybe the Bengals before they got hurt. You know, again, you're right, Dennis. There are certain teams that have the makeup for it, and there are others that are going to sneak in. But I think, again, you need to take advantage of your opportunities, and you need to do whatever you have to do. Not the Belichick way, do whatever you got to do, but do whatever you got to do to strengthen your team and do what you and get wins against whoever it is. It doesn't matter. You know, if they have to play the number one seed and you have to play the bottom seed, it doesn't matter. It's still a win, and that's what you got to do. And like you said, you have a decent team at this point. Figure out what your strengths are. Figure out what your weaknesses are. Stay away from them and go ahead and play. And again, I would, you know, I think when you did this, your analysis of the Jets before the season and you thought they weren't going to win six games and we were joking around about them winning four or five games, that was when Geno Smith was still in the picture. Ryan Fitzpatrick is obviously your MVP of the season, and he's done very well. Now, I know there's always that, you know, even when they were playing the Giants, you texted me, interception, you know, is it coming? When is the other Ryan Fitzpatrick going to show up this year? And hopefully it's not in a big spot, but he's been fantastic for you. And I think this is your chance. Don't even worry about, you know, people are asking already, is he going to be the quarterback next year? Who cares? You know, he's doing something very well for you. He's bringing this team along. Don't worry about that. Who cares if anybody's going to be here next year? You know, take what you got and run with it and do the most you can with it.
Yeah, especially if they continue to progress and play well down the stretch, and who knows what's going to happen. The thing is this, again, getting back to, you say there are championship caliber teams, but let's look at 2011. I mentioned this. The 9-7 New York Giants went on the road. I believe the Packers were 15-1 that year. Am I correct?
Yeah, they were.
They went on the road to the 15-1 Packers, and they beat them. Now, look, again, I think the Giants were better than the 9-17. They had some injuries. They got some guys back. But you never know. Like you're saying, if the Jets go into the playoffs, they will be an underdog against every team they play, no matter how far they go. They will be an underdog. But you know what? I'd rather have my shot at it and take my chance when I get my opportunity to get in, because it's so hard. You play the season to get in. But I never really got to my point here, which is with the Giants and the Jets, too. Even the Jets, which is the final point, Jerry Reese, and you look at his – I mean, even Ozzie Newsome, who's one of the best GMs in the league, you look this year, I mean, he missed out on Breshad Perriman, the number one pick. The guy didn't even play. I mean, the team's falling apart. I mean, should he be fired? I mean, they're going to be 4-12, in my opinion. We're going to discuss them in a minute. They're probably going to have 4-12. They're playing the Chiefs, the Steelers, and at the Bengals. I mean, this is like – they got all three teams who are in the playoff race who really need to win bad against a team that's reeling. So you're going to fire Ozzie Newsome? I mean, again, this is what I talk about, kind of like saying having some patience and having some things and having some stability. And then what the Giants do right and maybe what the Jets have and maybe what they need now, because they're kind of stuck with Mike Maccagnan and Todd Bowles for three or four more years. Whether they're great or not, they have to let them play. And here's the difference between really being an elite team and being kind of that middle-of-the-road team, that 8-8, 9 win, maybe you sneak in the playoffs in the next year, kind of in the – is drafting. I think you know this, Joe. Mm-hmm. Free agents, yeah. Look at Seattle. We'll take Seattle. I know you don't like Pete Carroll, but we'll take Seattle as an example. I mean, they got the bargains of the century when they had Richard Sherman making a little bit of money. They had Cam Chancellor making small money. They had Russell Wilson making small money. By the way, Russell Wilson, who has upped his game and really playing nice out of the pocket. But they were able to supplement that then by having those low salaries, by bringing in a Michael Bennett, by bringing in a Clifford Real, by trading for a Marshawn Lynch. You see, people think because I like salary cap stuff that I'm against free agency, and I'm not against it at all. But as you said, and I say, you can only bring in bits and pieces in free agency. Hey, listen, I got a glaring hole here. Boom, I filled it with a free agent. Yeah, it cost me more money. Okay, hopefully it gives me the production looking moving forward. I mean, look at some of the free agent signings this year. And Dominican Sue, who you watched the other night. I mean, is he worth the $60 million guaranteed he got?
No.
They have the worst run defense in the league, Miami. So, you know, there is a place for free agency. A guy fits your system, boom, it plugs a hole. It leaves resources open other places for draft. This is how you build depth, too. Let's say, I need a right tackle right now. Boom. Here's a right tackle. I give him a contract, maybe 2 years, and now I develop this fourth-round pick behind him. The guy gets hurt. I have a guy to plug in for some depth. Then he comes back, and then 2 years later, he goes bye-bye. So, again, this is kind of how you build a team, and you build consistency. And with Jerry Reese, I'm gonna finish with this, and then let you in. Mm-hmm. With Jerry Reese, what he needs to do is you laid out kind of a middle of the road kind of GM. That's a middle of the road kind of GM. Some hits, some misses. He needs to find some more diamonds in the rough. The Victor Cruzes of the world can't fill your whole team with that. But he needs to have some more drafts where a bigger majority of his draft class is really producing, and maybe hit on a superstar in round 5. This is the same thing with the Jets. Same thing with the Jets, Joe. I'll let you in right now. Same thing with the Jets. They haven't had a fifth-round pick that's been a Pro Bowler. I mean, it happens. It happens enough that it should happen more than zero in 10 years. You know what I'm saying?
No, I agree with you, and I call them the Bill Belichick picks because they always trade away their top picks, and they go to the round 4 and 5, and they find guys that they can plug into their system. And I think with free agents, Dennis, you're absolutely correct. I think what you need to avoid doing is trying to make that big splash, the name guy, like the Dominican Sue, whatever. You know, you have to really sit back and say, okay, does he fit our scheme? Is he who we want? Is he the type of player we want? You know, Albert Haynesworth, right? Everybody, and you go, do you really want him on your team? You know, you have to sit back, and this is where I think as, you know, you and I are fans, Dennis, and we kind of are on the fringes. We get a little bit more information maybe, or we, you know, you get to go to the games and cover them a little bit. So we're a little bit on that fringe. But I think when you talk about things like this, like salary cap, like you do, like draft picks, and you talk about, you almost have to put your owner's hat on for a minute. And like you said, that patience, right? You have to sit there. If you and I were now sitting in a nice place with a glass of scotch in front of us and we own teams, what would your assessment be of guys in the league? Because as fans, you're going, oh, you got to fire this coach and you got to fire this guy and we got to do this. But again, you're trying to build that consistency. You're trying to look to the future a little bit. You're trying to be honest about what you tried to do and what didn't work. And did it not work as in Chip Kelly? It's not working because he's picked guys and gotten rid of guys that aren't working in the system. Or did you pick up the 10 guys you wanted and 9 of them got hurt? And then you have to sit back and say, look, this is nothing we could have. You know, you really have to be honest, right? You have to look back, and it's more of a business sense at that point. So I think a lot of times people react to things, and again, you look at it from fan side, or you can sit back and say, okay, you know, they wanted to fire Tom Coughlin in 2011 after that Redskin game. I remember Carl Banks being on the radio with Joe and Evan. They're going crazy about firing Tom Coughlin after he lost to the Redskins in week 15 in 2011. And he's very calmly, he said, really? You want to break up this coach and quarterback? You want to start with a new offense? You want a clean house on a team that's won the Super Bowl a couple of years ago? And they wind up going to the playoffs and winning the Super Bowl. And so, again, maybe a little bit of patience to say what's somebody's fault, what's not somebody's fault, what's controllable, what's not. And, again, where do we need to get better? So I think it's a bigger conversation most of the time than most people you know, discuss. And that happens with everything. There was a big discussion on Sunday on the pregame shows about what's a catch, what's not a catch, and how the NFL has to fix it. And Tony Gonzalez said, oh, this should be a 30-minute meeting. 2 hands, 2 feet, inbounds, it's good. And James Brown looks at him and goes, 2 hands? He goes, well, 1 hand and 2 feet. And I go, yeah, well, there's your – this is why it's not a half-an-hour discussion, Tony, because you're the greatest tight end in the world. And you just screwed it up too. So, you know, it's not simple, and people want simple fixes, and it's not forthcoming all the time. So,
that's what Jet fans want. That's what Jet fans, and that's what they got this year. They got the quick fix. And now look, they're in the playoff race, but did they do some long-term harm? And that's my concern. Did they do some long-term harm? And that's what, but here, two things. I got a question for you, then I got one other comment. Then we're going to move on to the playoff race. Here's my question to you. Do you want the best team on the field every year?
As a fan?
Answer that question. If I ask you that question, do you want the best team on the field every year? What would you say?
Yes.
You would say yes. You see, I would say no, and here's why. Mm-hmm. Because the best team on the field might be a mediocre team every year. Like, especially in football, you want to do the Daniel Snyder and go out and spend a ton of money every year. You want to be 8-8, 7-9. You want to be the Buffalo Bills? You want to be the Buffalo Bills? I want a team. Now, here's the thing where you make the sacrifice. Maybe you say, you know what? I'm going to take this fourth round pick. And I'm going to play him because this guy's got potential. But you know what he doesn't have? Experience. And he's going to take his lumps. But you know, and this year he might be better. But you know what? He's going to get better. He's going to get better. And as he gets better and as these guys grow, like, for example, the Oakland Raiders, Reggie McKenzie, they stayed the course. Now, I mean, I don't think they're going to make the playoffs this year, but they have a very bright future. Khalil Mack, I mean, that's some legitimate superstars. Derek Carr is a legitimate franchise quarterback, at least turning into one. I look at the Jacksonville Jaguars. I'm saying, boy, they've got money. They've got some young talent that could be together for a long time as best as you can do in the NFL. And they got the money to keep them. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they won the AFC South next year. Wouldn't be shocked if Dante Fowler back. But again, let's look at so this is just, I want a championship caliber team. And if that means that 1 year I got to go 6-10 so that the next year I can win 10 games, or I go 8-8 and say, yeah, I was in the playoff race, and the next year I'm 7-9. Here's a great example. Minnesota Vikings were 7-9 last year. So were the Cleveland Browns. But two teams going in opposite directions. And look at their rosters. The Minnesota Vikings, they're young. They're hungry. They got a young quarterback. They still got room to grow. I mean, you look at their draft this year. Terrific. A terrific draft. Cole Pruitt. I mean, Stephon Diggs is a fifth-round draft pick. He's having a great year as a receiver. People talk about Brandon Marshall. And Brandon Marshall has been fantastic. Don't get me wrong. But you're paying him $9 million, and you traded away a fifth-round draft pick. I think I'd rather have the 22-year-old version of Brandon Marshall. But here's my final thing. I'll go back to you. Why are some organizations in general successful every year? Don't tell me because they have a great quarterback. Because Aaron Rodgers has been the best quarterback in the league probably the last 5 or 6 years. He's got one ring. It takes a whole team. Maybe this is why Brady is so successful. Take nothing away from how good he is. It takes a team to win a championship. It takes a team. And the team like the Pittsburgh Steelers that had problems in their secondary said, you know what? We'll go out. We'll plug in guys. We'll draft some guys. And if it might take two years or so before we're really, really good, but we'll be good. Why did they do that? Why didn't they run out and get Darrell Revis, Antonio Cromartie, and Marcus Gilchrist? Why? Maybe because they know something we don't. Maybe that's why they've got four rings and been to six, whatever it is exactly. Mm-hmm. The organizations that are successful seem to have this patient, smart, let's get rid of a guy a year early rather than a year late mentality. And this is my concern with the Jets this year. Even though they're in a position to make the playoffs, hey, that's great. Hey, that's wonderful. I'm just worried that they do ultimate damage down the road, like using the big charge card. Is that what they did? They used the charge card, and now the Bills are going to come in. That's what I worry about with the Jets, because when I look at their roster compared to some other teams' rosters, I say, oh, boy, they got a lot of decisions to make, and I just don't see them putting that championship-caliber team on the field, that young, hungry, fast, athletic playmakers. I just don't see it, and that's what I worry about. So go ahead.
Yeah, no, I think you're right, Dennis. I think the Jets at this point, you know, you kind of, I'm not going to say you got lucky because, but again, this wasn't the plan. The plan was Geno Smith. And I think that would have been a bigger disaster, spending all that money. I think you would have won 5 or 6 games. And you know, you kind of got lucky that he got hurt and that Fitzpatrick walked in and played as well. And you found out that Fitzpatrick could play as well. I don't know if Bowles would have made that change. If he saw Geno struggling, you know, did Fitzpatrick show enough in practice that he was going to make that change? But again, that's a whole nother 3-week decision, right? When do you make the change? You pull the quarterback, and that's more controversy, more stuff. So it kind of gave you a little bit more stability. And like you said, yeah, some of these guys are older. So maybe it's their last hurrah. You know, I don't see Darrell playing too much longer. I don't see Cromartie playing all that much longer.
Cromartie might be gone after this year.
Yeah, Marshall playing all that much longer because they're all, just because of their ages. So maybe this is a good scenario to get them back front page without the circus of Rex, and to make them look like a legitimate team. But I agree with you. You got to follow this up now with, you know, again, don't worry about it this year. Don't talk about who's going to be the quarterback next year. But now you got to follow this up with what's our plan. Do we have somebody that's going to replace these guys? Do we have something coming in? Are we going to? Did we draft well in the last couple of years to make this transition when some of these guys leave? Or do we just have to continue to try to find free agent guys to plug in here? And that's where the disaster comes, because like you said, then you can't afford it. Then you wind up with one or two guys playing out there that are getting paid. You know, it's not easy. Like you said, Seattle's probably the best example for anybody. Now that you have to pay Russell Wilson, and again, he deserves the money. That's not the question. But once you got to pay him, it puts a lot of stress paying the rest of the team. And as these numbers continue to go up and the salary cap doesn't go up proportionally, it gets tougher and tougher. And again, that's why I give guys like Jerry and Ozzie and those guys a lot of credit too, because you've got to figure out a way to do that, right? You got to figure out a way to make everyone kind of happy. And if you have to say to you know, Jerry Reese had to tell an OC Umanura, I can't pay you that much. Good luck. I can't do it. You know, I love you. Come back when you're done, but I can't do it. I can't pay Chris Canty and Michael Bowley to play 8 games a year. Sorry. You know, you guys are hurt too much. I just can't do it. Because I got to pay this guy who's won us 2 Super Bowls in Eli Manning, And that's the reality of it. And so I think it's a tougher job than most people realize. And I know you know that, Dennis, because you follow both sides of it, the financial end of it and the talent end of it.
Yeah, you know what? I mean, again, you talk about being a fan. I understand fans want – they want every free agent. They want all these things. And,
right,
you know, there's Bill Polian, I mentioned last week. He used to say this: if you listen to the fans, you'll be sitting with the fans. You can't do what the fans want. My opinion is you're right about the Jets. Look, the Jets could follow this up, but they need to do it this way. They have to have good drafts. And this is Jerry Reese, too. He's got money next year. Jerry Reese has some money next year. But he's got some decisions. JPP, what's he going to do? I mean, he looks decent, but that hand injury is certainly hurting his production. He can't wrap up. You see that. You see that it's definitely something that is a concern. You know, what is he going to do? What is he going to do? He doesn't want to really bring in a ton of free agents. He wants to use his draft, but he's going to have to figure it out. And, again,
it might make it easier to sign JPP because he's no longer thinking of himself as the greatest player in the NFL. He's now realized his limitations. He's working hard to get back to where he wants to be. I guess he's been one of the best guys in the locker room. So it's changed his personality a little bit, and it's changed his production a little bit, but he's working so hard at it that this may make it easier to sign him and, you know, maybe give him that kind of that thing where they want to keep working together. So that'll be interesting. I agree with you, and I know we got some money coming. But again, you got to use it properly. This isn't baseball. You know, I think that's the problem too. The two big sports in this country are so opposite. If you want to go sign everybody in baseball, go right ahead, because nobody cares. You know, you got to pay a luxury tax, but who cares? You know, you could be the Dodgers or you could be the Yankees, which just go out and sign everybody they can, or you can be my team and you say, I can't afford to sign everybody. I got to be smart about what I have and hope you hit on a couple of guys.
Yeah, you know, the other thing, and I'll just leave it and we'll get into the playoff races as quickly, is that the money carries over. So, like, if you have $40 million, and again, you're going to fill it in and say, hey, you know what, I got $15 million left over, okay, and then I'm going to carry that over the next year. And then if I really pay, see, that's the way it works. Your salary cap is set by the NFL, but then your actual salary cap is the money that you carried over from the year before. So if you have $10 million extra, that gives you an advantage because now you can go $10 million above, quote-unquote, the NFL salary cap because your actual salary cap is higher. So when you have this bulk of money, and this is what bothered me with the Jets, is that you don't need to spend it all right now. You space it out because you're going to have questions every year, and it gives you flexibility. Flexibility to sign guys you want to keep. Flexibility to bring a free agent, and flexibility to get rid of guys because a lot of times you take a dead money hit, which is money that counts on the salary cap for a guy who's not there. So you know what? I'm going to take a big dead money hit to get rid of this guy, but you know what? He's got to go. Bye. I can handle it and weather the storm. That's very important, controlling your finances and doing those things. But the bottom line is here, and this is going to finish with this going to the playoffs. Bottom line is, to be successful in the league in general, and you know this because the Giants had this when they were successful, their drafts from top to bottom produced in various ways. Some of them produced at a high level, even in their late draft picks. Some of them were just special teamers, you mentioned. Some of them played on those Super Bowl teams and then were out in a few years. Again, you always have to keep replenishing that stock of younger players because, as you already mentioned, their careers are short. They you always, and this is one thing that the Patriots, as much as I hate them, do very well. They always bring in those 8 or 9 or maybe even 10 new players to replenish because they know that they got to replenish the stock every year. And they get versatile players that fit the system. Yes, they have Tom Brady, and I wish I had a quarterback of his abilities. But you know what? You look at their defense this year. They're pretty darn good, their defense. Their defense is pretty darn good, the Patriots. It's not just Tom Brady and the offense. They have a very good defense, and I know their special teams have been a little lacking in the last few games, but for the most part, the special teams are good. They have a good kicker, and, you know, it's a whole team effort. And you're not going to win a championship, in my opinion, with just having a great quarterback. Because otherwise, John Elway, and we'll wrap up with this, John Elway didn't win his Super Bowls until he had Terrell Davis, until he had the, you know, the guys on DE, until he had the defense. Why the heck is the coach escaping my mind who he had, who was the coach there? Mike Shanahan. Yeah, Mike Shanahan. So until, I mean, John Elway was at the end of his career. Could he still play? Yeah. But he had that running game. They had a lot of things that he didn't have when he carried them to those 3 Super Bowls that they had no chance of winning. So it goes to show you, it takes a village to win a championship, and that's just my opinion. Let's roll into the playoff picture here to kind of finish up the hour. And it's very interesting. something that I had mentioned about the Patriots taking over first place, and they did number one seed. They're playing the Titans this week, and then they play the Jets, which will be a big game for the Jets. Talk about that in a minute. Here's something I want to get into. So let's leave the AFC East alone right now. New England's going to win it. Let's see if they end up with a number one seed. They're going to play hard the next 2 weeks. They're going to play hard. Tennessee, mm-hmm. I mean, I saw Tennessee last week. I can't see Tennessee going on the road to Foxborough and winning that game. Given the win, they're going to come to the Jets. That might be the game they ice the season with, meaning they get the number one seed. So they're gonna play hard against the Jets. It's not an easy game. The Bengals right now. Bengals sit at 10-3. Okay? They lost Andy Dalton. Let me go through their schedule quick. They play out at San Francisco. They play they play at Denver. Excuse me. They play at Denver on a Monday night game the week after that. Then they finish up against the Ravens. We had mentioned the Ravens. So Pittsburgh plays Denver this week and then plays at the Ravens, and then they finish at Cleveland. Think that Pittsburgh's getting to 10, maybe 11. Here's my question to you. And the tiebreaker scenario with this, if they both finish at 11, is going to be, depending upon if Cincinnati won an AFC game, they could end up tied at 11 and tied in the – and you have to go to strength of schedule this way. Pittsburgh has an outside chance of winning this division. I don't see it, but they have an outside chance of winning this division. So what do you think about what's going on there in the AFC North?
Yeah, I think you look at Cincinnati and you say, okay, you know, hopefully we can get a win at San Francisco. But going against that defense in Denver, and again, is Andy Dalton going to be playing, or are we going to have pictures of A.J. McCarron's wife for the afternoon as he's laying on the turf? And again, like you said, they need to beat Baltimore because they need to get that – they need to get the division win. Because if they get the 5 division wins, then Pittsburgh can't get the 5 division wins. So that's really the big one. Like you said, that's going to come into play a lot because that's why Baltimore's going to play into this a lot. Because if you can beat Baltimore, then you get the 5 division wins. So you'll win the tiebreaker there. So that's going to be their big game. But I don't see that, and so that makes Pittsburgh have to win all 3, which is not impossible. Of course, nothing's impossible, as we know. But again, they have Denver coming in, then they play Baltimore, then they play Cleveland. So they're going to have to beat Baltimore. They're going to have to beat Cleveland. That's not a doubt. On the road, they have a big game with Denver coming in this week. It's nice that they kind of play the same teams. You know, it's not a unbalanced schedule at this point. So Denver's going to play into this picture, without Peyton Manning, and Baltimore's going to play into that picture. So it'll be interesting because, like I said, if Cincinnati manages to win that game against, Baltimore, that gets them the 5 division wins. That'll give them that tiebreaker over the Steelers. And then they don't have to win all 3. They only have to win 2 games.
Yeah. You know, the thing with Cincinnati too, and getting into the wild card, if it was again that scenario where Pittsburgh would have passed them, the Jets would have went out. Something like that, or, you know, obviously if Cincinnati loses out and the Jets are at 10 wins, I still don't think they get the tiebreaker with them because they have the same conference record. I think the head-to-head, they lose. But if Cincinnati wins one more game, the Jets can't catch them as far as wild card. So that's one thing about Cincinnati. But we're going to jump to the AFC West. Denver, here's a team that I think that the Jets, looking at it, people are saying, well, if Pittsburgh wins out and the Chiefs win out, the Jets can't make it as a wild card. I'm like, well, wait a minute, hold on a second. The Denver Broncos here are sitting at 10-3. All right? The Jets could actually lose an AFC game. They only have 2 left. They have 1 against Dallas, which is NFC, obviously. They could lose an AFC game. And if Denver loses out, the Jets and say Kansas City wins 10 or 11, they win the division, and the Jets would get that 6th wild card over Denver. I mean, here's the thing with Denver. Denver's playing at Pittsburgh, which I think they're going to lose. Then they play that Monday night against Cincinnati, which is a toss-up because you got no Andy Dalton.
Osweiler against A.J. McCarron.
Yeah, who would have called that? Who would have called that
on a Monday night?
Who would have called that one? The Monday night. But again, also the Broncos play San Diego at the – so there's a lot of different variables here as far as this goes with Denver.
So your
Kansas
Chargers,
City's going to win the division.
So your Chargers, who you picked to be to win the West, could come back to hurt the, to knock the Jets out of the playoffs.
They could they could knock the Jets out of the playoffs. Oh, the Jets could knock themselves out of the playoffs. I mean, look, they could lose. But San Diego could put the Jets in the playoffs because they play San Diego at the end of the year. The Broncos, the Chargers play the Broncos at the end of the year. Again, that's kind of the game there. Again, if the Jets win out and Denver were to win 11 games and say beat even that, I think they would still lose. Let me see here because it's a conference. It's really a conference. Yeah, they would. The Jets. If the Jets were to win out and Denver were to win one game, which would be against San Diego, and Kansas City, say, tied them, Kansas City would win the division. The Jets would get in with a tiebreaker. So that wouldn't matter. See, the Jets winning out, again, this is very hard. The Jets have Dallas, which is not – again, they're going on the road. Dallas is playing for their lives. You know, it's statistically, they're still in it mathematically. They're going to play hard. So you can't just chalk up a W, but let's assume they win that game. Then they got to play New England. The tough, New England's going to come in with a lot to play for because they want that last week to be irrelevant. So, if I give the, and then they got to play Buffalo on the road, which isn't a give me a game either.
Yeah, because you know Rex is going to want to beat them.
Rex is going to want to beat them.
Yep. So, no, I don't think it's easy. And again, the doubt, you just hope, and I don't think this is the case with this coach. So don't get me wrong. You like you said, you can't look past Dallas. You can't say, oh, we're going down to Dallas, who stinks. But we got New England and Buffalo. You can't that way at all. This Saturday game in Dallas, prime time, everybody's going to be watching. It'll be interesting to see which Dallas team shows up and if Matt, both those guys, Castle and Whedon earlier in the year. People have got to be looking at them saying, you got to be able to win a ball game somewhere, against somebody. So it'll be interesting to see how they play. They're still in it, but I think they know that the chances are slim and none. Again, I'm not sure you even want to get in at that point. But, of course, I want them to beat Washington the last week. So that's my big hope.
Yeah, there's a lot of AFC NFC East matchups going on. We'll get into them one second. Just food for thought here. Again, Pittsburgh is chasing Cincinnati. Would it be a shock if Pittsburgh won the division? No. Kansas City is chasing Denver. Would it be a shock if Kansas City passed Denver? No. So there's a lot of scenarios here as far as that goes. I think New England's going to end up with the number one seed again. Denver and Cincinnati play each other. They play each other, so one of them is going to go to 11 wins, unless there's a tie, which we doubt. So they play each other, so one of them will go to 11, get another conference win. And, again, if Cincinnati were to win that game, let's say, for example, this would be a bad case scenario for the Jets. Cincinnati goes on the road and beats San Francisco, which is very likely, okay? Okay, and that would eliminate the Jets from catching Cincinnati at all. Pittsburgh beats Denver, then Denver goes and beats Cincinnati and then beats San Diego. That would put them at 12. That would put the Jets out. Again, the Jets have – there's so many scenarios here. But let's get in the AFC South. There's so many scenarios with the wild card. But, Pittsburgh has this tough game. They could lose to Denver and win out. And the Jets, if they lost one AFC game, would be out. Pittsburgh would win on the head-to-head matchup kind of thing. Again, there's a lot of tiebreaker scenarios. The big one is conference. After that, it gets a little dicey. You have to kind of look it up. But I've kind of already looked it up. If Pittsburgh wins out and loses to Denver and wins out, and the Jets, say, lost to New England, and they had the same record, and even if the Chiefs had 10 wins, forget about Denver and Cincinnati, okay, the Jets would be out. The Chiefs have the best tiebreaker scenario right now as far as a tie, and then Pittsburgh would beat out the Jets. So, it's going to come down to a lot of different things. The Steelers are real hot. They're red hot right now. I think they can win out. I think the Chiefs can win out too. Again, maybe one of them loses one game, but I'm just looking at Denver. If I'm a Jet fan, I'm rooting for Pittsburgh this week. I'm rooting for Pittsburgh, and then I'm rooting for Cincinnati, and then I'm crossing my fingers and hope that either the Jets win out or that Denver loses out if the Jets do happen to lose one AFC game. Quickly, AFC South. Big game this week. Big game with the 2-6-7 teams. The Colts are playing the Texans. Texans are without Brian Hoyer, another concussion, T.J. Yates. Colts are without Andrew Luck, probably for the year, it looks like. I mean, I would say the Texans have the upper hand just because of this. The Colts have looked terrible on defense. Hasselbeck's finally running out of gas, 4 years old. And they play Tennessee and they play Jacksonville at home, even though Jacksonville's much improved. And I think Jacksonville can maybe get to 7-9 and the arrow's pointing up for them. I'm going to kind of give the edge to Colts play at Dolphins, though. That's an easy game. And then they play at the Titans. Look, I don't know who's going to come out and win this one. I'll flip a coin and say the Texans win this game and that gives them the edge and they end up winning out. Let's see, the division-wise, they're kind of close. Yeah, it's going to be conference. They're close. I mean, it's going to come down. It might come down to some sort of tiebreaker scenario where they're tied with the same record, and then you're going to go into the kind of common opponents and winning percentage and that kind of thing. But I don't see Jacksonville just having enough steam to really surpass them. But because they're playing each other, they're going to get one leg up on them. But you know what? We all thought that myself, yourself, the Colts would be the team to beat, and this division is kind of like the NFC South was last year. But next year, could there be a team, maybe not 13-0, like the Carolina? And I'm going to say it's going to be, in my mind, the Jacksonville Jaguars. They're in a position next year maybe take this division and be a 10-win team. That's what I feel. But how do you feel about right now? Who do you think is going to win? I'll guess the Texans. I'll flip my coin and guess the Texans. But who do you think right now?
I think this is going to come down to that last week. I think Jacksonville at Houston could be for the deal. You know, the Colts, like you said, without Andrew Luck, you know, and they really don't have a very good defense as Jacksonville showed them. I think Jacksonville's on a roll, and they're playing teams that really don't have any defense. And I think that they're going to be able to put up the points, and they're going to be able to keep this going up. You know, they're playing Atlanta, who's awful, who suddenly can't win a game.
Yeah, playing New Orleans.
Playing New Orleans, who that'll just be another shootout. And then they go down to Houston. So wouldn't that be great if you could put Jacksonville and Houston on, you know, the Sunday night game at the end of the year and play for the AFC South? Now, Houston's going to have to lose a game along the way to make that happen. And they may have to lose to Indianapolis. But then that gives them four wins in the division. So, it's all kind of divisions make it tough. Jacksonville only has that last one division game. They already have three losses in the division. Indianapolis only has one. It depends. If Indianapolis loses two games and Houston loses two games, then you could have the Jacksonville Jaguars take that step up. I think they have the easier schedule, and that could be a fun game at the end of the year to play it off for. But I think it's between those two. I think it's between Houston and Jacksonville. And if everything falls right, I think Jacksonville could actually take the step this year and win this division at 8-8. And then, like you said, you look at that division, you go, okay, Jacksonville's really on the rise. Tennessee's got Mariota, and maybe they start to figure out how to put some other pieces around them and build that team. And then you got Andrew Luck coming back. You never discount for next year. So I think that's going to turn into one of those strong divisions. And Houston needs something. I don't know what Houston needs to find a
quarterback, maybe.
Yeah, because they rely too much on this whole defensive thing and J.J. Watt and let's play him here, let's play him there. And you go, maybe you need a quarterback that can play those positions and you need another running back, because Arian Foster gets hurt every year. So maybe, those are the things like we talk about, Dennis, with GMs, letting guys go or looking for other things. You can't just keep going every year. Arian Foster's been hurt, the last 3 years? He's missed a significant amount of games. You can't just go into training camp every year with his name on the top and go, oh, okay, we got him and we got Alfred Blue. And you go, yeah, well, you might as well just put Blue on top because Arian's going to get hurt. And you have to think that way. You have to say we need – Tom Coughlin got a question the other day about his four running backs, and he looked at the guy asking the question. He said, I have no idea why you guys are hung up on this. What's wrong with having more than one? He said, everybody's got a different skill set. I can use them at different times. Guys are fresher. Guys, because what's the problem? I don't understand why that's a bad thing, that I have four guys who can run the ball, instead of having one who gets hurt. And now what do you do? So I think they need to. Their front office a little bit better because some of the guys they got down there. But I don't think they've done a good job down there. They need to identify a good quarterback. Maybe the Carr thing set them back that many years ago that they've never figured it out, but. They just struggle too much, and I don't see them taking that next step. And then that defense is going to get old before their offense gets better, and then they're in trouble. So I think it'll be between Jacksonville and Houston this year.
Well, that would be interesting. I would be interested in seeing that. If Jacksonville made it in, it would be kind of funny because John Edzik works with them. And, you know, if they were to play the Jets and win that game, that would definitely, John Edzik would definitely have a big smile on his face. I do have to say this about Indianapolis Colts, the GM, Ryan Grigson, has done a disservice to Andrew Luck. Look, when you have a franchise quarterback, you go out, you get some offensive linemen. I mean, Todd Herriman's, right. I mean, Chip Kelly, for all his faults, and we kind of questioned him when he let Herriman's and Evan Mathis go, but was it really now looking at it, they released Todd Herriman's, the Colts. Mm-hmm. That's how bad he was.
Yep.
And they have a terrible offensive line. I mean, look, Andrew Luck, I mean, he's been banged around since he's been in this league more than any other quarterback. No wonder why his kidneys are falling out. I mean, you got to protect this guy. First and foremost, again, you got to prioritize. Where am I going to put my resources? Where is my strength going to be? Well, I got a franchise quarterback. I got to protect him. I got to keep him upright. You know, maybe I want to run the ball a little bit too. That protects my quarterback also. So it's just a bad job by the I mean, drafting Phil, even I'll go back to the Miami Dolphins. When they drafted Devontae Parker, I mean, I was like, why didn't they draft an offensive lineman? They need an offensive lineman more than they need a receiver, but they went with the receiver, and maybe that was a mistake. Again, it's easy to play Monday morning quarterback here, but right. You know, looking at some of these teams, looking at some of the decision-making process, again, Jacksonville, Oakland, I'll take them as an example, and we'll go into the NFC playoff picture, of teams that were patient. Again, they stuck with Gus Bradley. They stuck with David Cole. David Caldwell said to Shad Khan, listen, I need 4 years. Now right. They're in year three. They're close. This is why David Caldwell was not the GM of the Jets, why John Idzik became. And John Idzik tried to take this kind of slow and steady approach, and they didn't want any part of it. They didn't want any part of it. Look, the Jacksonville Jaguars have been bad. I mean, last year the Oakland Raiders were 3-13. You see, right. They quickly turn around, and now next year you wouldn't be surprised if they're a double-digit win team. You wouldn't be surprised at all. It doesn't take 10 years. But it might take a couple of lean years. It might. Just for you right. To get those draft picks, you hit on the top ones, a couple, and you get that quarterback in there, blah, blah, blah. We discussed this earlier. But that's my point, is that looking forward, again, when you look at your team at the end of the season, no matter what they do, there's only one comes out on top, unfortunately. So you say, is my arrow pointing up, down, or sideways? And you know what? I really want my arrow pointing up. Let's get into the NFC because, again, there's still a lot of things that can happen. My opinion as a Jets fan is, I've been saying this, is I want Pittsburgh to actually win because I still think the Jets are going to lose a game going out, and their best chance of making the playoffs, losing a game going out in the AFC, is if the Broncos fall apart. And you know what? Division game at the end of the year, San Diego, nothing to play for. Why not? Maybe if Manning doesn't come back, who the heck knows? I've seen stranger things happen than a team have. And this is why I keep reading this about how the Jets can't make it if they win, if the Steelers and the Chiefs win out. I'm like, well, no. You got two teams here, Cincinnati and Denver, only at 10 wins. They don't have 11 yet or 12. So right. We got to see what happens with them. I think Cincinnati has a pretty good chance of getting to 12. We'll see. Okay. We've talked a little about the NFC East. We know it's just forget about it. Forget about trying to figure that one out. It's gonna take to the end. It's coming down to the last week, no matter who it is. We know that.
Right.
No matter who
right.
it is, it's coming down to the last week. The Giants had this tough schedule. Carolina coming in undefeated. Then they got to go to Minnesota. Two tough games. You know, you got Washington at Philly. Right? Is that next week? That's next week. You got the Bills playing the Redskins, and you got the Cardinals at the Eagles. And here's something, Joe, I want to get into quickly. Cardinals sit at 11-2. They haven't clinched the division yet.
Right.
I know they're playing Philadelphia. I know you're praying for them to win because you hate the Eagles and you want the Cardinals. And I would think the Cardinals are favored, and I think they should win this game. But would it shock you if the Eagles won? Then the Cardinals have to go play at home against the Packers. My thing is this, again, getting back to it. They're 11-2 right now. The Cardinals are probably going to win the division. But could they collapse? Because they play the Seahawks at the end of the year. If they lose two in a row, then that game at the end of the year will be for the division.
Yeah, no, it's possible. I mean, this is what's fun about this time of year, right? This is you look at these schedules and you look at the, again, you know, you always go back to division wins, at least I do. You know, Arizona could get to one more,
which Seattle can't.
And that would be against them. So that's why that
game
becomes.
One more win, they can't get the 12 wins. One more win puts them at 12. That's it.
Right. So,
I'm just saying they have to lose out.
Coming across country to play Philadelphia doesn't shock me. Obviously, if Green Bay could beat them in Arizona, you know, that'll be a shootout. That'll be a fun game to watch. And then it comes down to Seattle and Arizona if Seattle, you know, keeps stride. So, yeah, I think that could be, you know, that's probably the best one that,
even though the Cardinals look like they're the class of the, you know, one of the class teams of the NFC, obviously behind Carolina. But like you said, they could actually get pushed out and pushed down to a wild card team. So it'll be interesting. It's, you know, I think the team that's in the rough spot here, Dennis, in the NFC, is the Vikings. Because suddenly they haven't looked as overpowering for a couple of weeks, and then, you know, they looked horrible against Seattle. You know, then they lose to Arizona. Now they have a big rivalry game with Chicago. And we all know Chicago plays better on the road for some reason. I can't figure that one out. And then they switched the Giants game to a Sunday night game now, right after Christmas. We got to go up there. And then they got to finish with Green Bay, who probably be playing maybe for the division or maybe not, depending on what Minnesota does. So I think they're in a tough spot. I think they have a tougher road to hoe than a couple of these other teams. Who does Green Bay play? Green Bay plays Oakland, and then obviously Arizona and Minnesota.
Yeah, you know, look, it's going to be interesting to see. I think Minnesota will. I can see them winning 2 out of 3. Maybe I think they still make it in the playoffs. But you're right. I mean, look, you could also play the card of they beat Chicago, they beat the Giants, and maybe Green Bay loses one and they go into that last game and it means top of the division. You can look at it. Yeah. You can look at it. You could definitely take a look at it that way. So I mean, I really don't know. Again, I'm not sure. I'm not giving Green Bay the division just yet. I'm not. I still think they're the favorites, but I'm not giving them the division just yet. Here's a question I want to ask you, Joe, before I forget. That Thursday night game, the Cardinals were playing the Vikings, and the Vikings were driving down the field. Here's what I would have done, and I just wanted to know what you thought of this. 2nd and 10, I believe they were on the 31-yard line, the Cardinals' 31-yard line. So trying to remember off the top of my head, I kind of stuck it in there because on 2nd and 10, 21 seconds left. 21 seconds left, mm-hmm. No timeouts. Mm-hmm. The clock has stopped. I said to myself, I said, you know what? I said, if I were Mike Zimmer, the coach, I would run the ball, run up, clock it, kick the field goal, and go to, obviously, hopefully, make the field goal, and go to overtime. Try to get a few yards closer. They'd already made a long field goal, a 54-yard, I believe, in the game. So get a few yards closer if you can. Obviously, you know, who knows how much closer you're going to get, but they're probably not expecting a run. Maybe you get 4 or 5 yards, 3, 4, 4, whatever. Run up, clock the ball, take the field goal. Because I'm like, you know what? In this area of the field, and what, you know what happened on third down when they got the fumble, the strip sack, and that kind of thing. I'm like, you're playing with fire because your best bet is to maybe run a 5 yard out and stop the clock. But when you drop back, obviously you can put yourself out of field goal range. You don't want to do that. And you also throw an incomplete pass, and if from the 31, it's still a fairly long field goal. I'm like, yeah, you know, 3-4 yards would make me, as a coach, feel more comfortable. That's the way I would have played that. Now, who knows if they would have won anyway, but that's the way I would have played that. I just wanted to get your 2 cents on that. Because, again, managing the clock down the end there, that wasn't the best clock management. I would have taken the more safer approach and said, I'll play for overtime and take my chances, rather than trying to get a touchdown here with 21 seconds. Throw it in the middle of the field or something like that, crazy happens and the time runs out. You never know. It's close enough that you can be scared of that.
And I think you have 2 things working against you there too, because you really need, you know, the young quarterback, you got to make sure he's going to make the right decision there. And if you give him too many options, I think you run the play like the Giants did the other night at the end of the game, you know, that quick, you know, Cordarrelle Patterson 4 yard pass to the sideline, you know, safe, something like that to get you a few extra yards. Try to get out of bounds. I think a lot of coaches are reluctant to play for overtime. And I think they keep pushing and it's like they want to get it over then for whatever reason. I mean, you know, overtime's a crapshoot too, but at least you have a chance at that point instead of coming down there and not having a chance at all. I agree with you 100%, Dennis. You don't call a 7-step drop at that point. And we don't know if he did. Again, you got a young quarterback, but that, you know, he let the worst thing happen. He let himself get sacked 7-8 yards deep and that was the end of the ball game. So poorly played, poorly executed. And again, I don't know what the call was, but obviously that's something he needs to just come up with, a quick 3-step drop, something to the outside, or run the ball would be perfect too, as long as you have enough time, which you do with 21 seconds, to get up there and get the pile done and get everybody lined up and spike it. I think they always say, you know, 15, 16 seconds is always safe to be able to do that if you run the ball. So I agree with you. I think teams don't play enough for overtime. I think at that point with a young team and a young quarterback, you don't want to put them in that position to make a mistake. And I would have taken that outcome. I have no problem with running the ball there.
Yeah. You know, second and 10, you run the ball, then you clock it on third down, fourth down, you kick the field goal. I was thinking that in my mind. I'm not playing Monday morning quarterback because I was actually thinking at the time, I'm like, if I'm Mike Zimmer, I'm running the ball, trying to get as close as I can. I'm playing for overtime with no timeouts at 21 seconds. You're just playing with fire. Anyway, one other quick thing I want to get into, and then we'll kind of wrap up with the NFC player. This is strange to me. I still don't get it, and now maybe you won't get it either. The Oakland-Denver game. So mm-hmm. Oakland goes up. They score a touchdown. It's 12-9. They score a touchdown. They go up 15-12. Okay?
Yeah.
Obviously,
yeah.
Extra points come
for in. Two. He goes for two, I know.
Can you explain to me why he went for two? Because, I don't understand
because,
that.
No, I can. And the only reason I can explain it is because I was actually watching the game at the time. And unfortunately, when they went to the highlights of other games, the guys in the studio did a horrendous job of explaining this. They put it on Del Rio and saying, and believe it or not, Jack Del Rio went for two at this point. Well, his long snapper had gotten hurt, and he didn't have him available. They said he was unavailable at the time, and he didn't have anybody else to do it. And that's, you know, this is one of those little things as a coach, and Giant fans will remember we played the Steelers a couple of years back, and the Steelers' long snapper got hurt. And they wound up putting James Harrison in there, actually.
James Harrison, I remember that.
Yeah, and they talked to Tom Coughlin afterwards, and he said, when I was an assistant coach at some Division III school in his first years of coaching, that happened to him. And he goes, and I have that note that we have a backup guy who can do this. He goes, a lot of teams have one guy, and that's it. And they're completely – that guy gets hurt, and all of a sudden, you know, there's nobody over him anymore. Right, so the chances of getting hurt now are really slim and none. It's really a freak if the guy gets hurt because they clear this path now over the center on long snaps that no one can hit him, nobody can touch him, you can't line up over him. So he's a little bit more protected these days. That's what happened. The guy got hurt, and he went to call for it, and they said he's unavailable. So he said, "Well, go for two," and that's what happened. It wasn't, you know, he didn't say, "Oh yeah, let's," you know, he didn't miss the count or something because. Obviously, being up four or being up five doesn't matter. You know, but
being
up three
does.
Or four is huge, right?
Yeah.
So maybe you put, maybe you try something, but he didn't want to. And now, and you brought this up in our first show, Dennis. Now that the defense can actually run that ball back if it gets blocked, now you don't take that chance, right? You don't take a chance of throwing a snapper in there who can't snap the ball, who's never done it before. And having it go over the guy's head or going somewhere else because now you're giving away points. So I think at that point he has to say, well, okay, let's try it and go for two. And this is a play at least we've practiced with the guys on the field. And that's what he did. So I know Jack got a lot of garbage on that Sunday for it, but that was actually the reason was the guy was hurt.
Well, maybe he'll learn a lesson and have a guy,
a
backup
guy. I
think
that note is going to be added to his training camp schedule.
Yeah, have a backup to the long,
you know,
the long
Tom
snapper.
Tom Coughlin said, and a lot of players who have played for Tom have said this. They said, you know, a lot of guys complain that we go off to the side at the end of practice and we do special team stuff. And we have different guys doing different things. And guys would always say, oh, you know, he's just a hard ass. He's just a taskmaster. He just wants us out there. And he goes, no, now I have a guy who's actually done it. I have three guys who have held the ball in practice. I have three guys who can snap the ball. You know, Dak Diassi got hurt. He's been there for 9 years, never missed a game in 9 years. Gets hurt, they bring in another guy. He's done it before. They had a guy in the practice squad. So, you know, these little things are what make coaches great over time, that they have all this stuff prepared. And I'm sure Jack's going to, you know, talk to somebody and say, like I said, next year in training camp, I bet you he's got two or three guys doing everything because it comes back to haunt you. You know, you may never use it in your career, but the one time it happens, and a guy like Mike Tomlin, like we said, against the Giants, got stuck that on a Monday, I guess it was a Monday night game or a Thursday night game, and he got stuck, and he's, you know, to Mike Tomlin's credit, he said, hey, no excuses, we lost the game. But he was unprepared. And he was a young coach who had never thought that through and wound up losing a ball game over it. So it's important to think of those things.
Yeah, man. You know, you never know. And again, you got that's why they get paid the big dollars. And you know, some guys are a little more prepared than others. But I thank you for clarifying that. I never even really looked into it, but it was something I found interesting. Now, let's just quickly wrap up on the NFC. Here's the bottom line. Again, these last 3 weeks, obviously, there's a ton of things that can happen. We went over a lot of different scenarios. We didn't do too much on the tiebreaker stuff. Conference record's very important. Outside of division, inside division, division record. You go from there. But let's just face it. You could potentially come down to the last week and you could have three divisions on the line in the NFC. Probably not, but you could, I would say, very good chance. One, definitely. You're definitely going to have one. And maybe two or three. And in the AFC, you could have three. You could have the AFC North, South, and West. Probably not going to happen that way where three divisions in each conference are going to come down to it. But you're certainly looking at, after this week or two, wondering whether there'll be three or four divisions on the line. And again, playoff spots, certainly there'll be playoff spots on the line going into that last week. But there's a lot of football to be played. There's a lot of scenarios. Here's something just to kind of wrap up on. The Atlanta Falcons started off this year at 5-0.
Yeah.
5-0. It goes to show, I always say this, it goes, not how you, I say September and October only puts you in a position to win. It's the teams that win down the stretch. You know, 5-0, if you've seen these start, 5-0, 6-0. You know, look at the Kansas City Chiefs, 1-5. We had them for dead. I had them for dead. Oh, they're dead. They'll never come back. You know, that Denver game where Peyton Manning had the plantar fasciitis through the four interceptions, maybe that was the one that turned their season around. Maybe that was the one they were supposed to lose, and they would have spiraled out of control, and they would have never gotten it back. That was the one they won and kind of propelled them forward. But, again, you can't count – September and October, yeah, look, you don't want to be 1-7. You're out of it. But if you can kind of hang around, you know, playing down the stretch there is very important. It goes to show you, a team that started off 5-0, that we thought, hey, they're going to make a wild card. Hey, now right now, you're going to be lucky if they win another game going out. But it will be very exciting, Joe. Again, another fantastic episode of Pro Football View from the East. We might not be doing a show next week because of the holiday. We'll have to see if we can get it in. We have some vacation plans. But if not, we'll be back in 2 weeks. But, Joe, I just want to thank you for another episode. It's going to be very exciting week 15, week 16, and then, you know, we'll go from there.
Yeah, if I'm a TV executive, I'm pretty excited at this point. I think I got my Christmas present. Like you said, you're going to have a lot of guys, a lot of teams in there. You're going to have a lot of close games. You got a lot of division games coming up. I think it's going to be pretty good. So looking forward to it. Hopefully we get to talk next week. If not, happy holidays to everybody. Merry Christmas. And
happy holidays, everybody. And so for Joe Tafaro, this is Dennis Agapito. We'll see you down the line for another fantastic episode of Pro Football View from the East.